Here we go. So as I mentioned before, here's my stack of notes. Started with the first installment. So I don't know why I don't understand this at all, but when I got the assignment of teaching time management and told my wife about it, she laughed. So I'm not I'm clearly in the dark on that. But it's probably not, it's not something that just comes really naturally for me. It's something I have to really work at. So I will be happy to share some ideological things as well as some personal experiences. First of all, is everybody in here teaching this next year? Most people. How many of you have taught for over 10 years? I know you have. Good. I did, yeah. At least if I hit the right button. I hit a button anyway. So there's people in here that could tell you much more, much better. But first of all, I have an object lesson, or maybe an illustration. It's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. Probably most of you have heard or seen of some version of this. And I should have probably had, filled this up as we went along. But we'll start with this. So here's a jar. Glass jar, you can see, with... How did I get him in here? I don't know. Hope my wife doesn't want this one again. Anyway, but good size rocks in here, right? And so we could say, looking at this, there's about, half a dozen rocks, maybe. And decent size. There's not a lot of room left in here. We could say this is full. You really couldn't fit another rock this unless you, knew trigonometry, geometry, calculus. I don't know what all you need to know. And fit these in better. But basically, you're not going to fit more big rocks in here, right? So we could say this is pretty full right here. Now I have another jar, and we could say, but this jar is pretty full. I didn't fill it to the top. I didn't want it to spill. So I was driving around. But this rock, this jar is pretty full of smaller rocks, right? Now you're not going to be able to. Now they'll all come out, right? Put more, put these rocks in here. You won't be able to really put more of these rocks in here. But if we do this right, now there's places that are sort of blocked off. But we could. We can. I need a bigger jar, but we can fit a few at least. We can fit some rocks in here. Now, if I had the correct jar, we could fit a lot more. But you could fit some down here and so forth, right? You're not going to get the whole jar in there, but you could. You can get some medium-sized, small rocks in there, right? I have a third jar. And this jar is full of awful stuff. This is beach sand. And it just goes everywhere, right? And the children run through it. And so this stuff is really fine, finer than most sandbox sand. And if you're ever thinking of making a sandbox, don't do this stuff. And you're not going to be able to fit any rocks in this, right? But with a little bit, maybe I should do it over here. We could sort of. We're fitting more than we should be, because there should be more medium-sized rocks in here. But we can actually get. We can still get some. We can get some sand in here, right? Now, what is that supposed to have to do with anything? Well, the big rocks, we could say, are, and what does this have to do with time management, or teaching time management? A couple things, I think. The big rocks, we could say, are the most important things in life. God, specifically, should be the biggest rock, right? We could say that our family could be our parents, spouse, children, whatever, friends, relationships, students in this case, right? Big, important things. The smaller rocks, we could say, are important, potentially. Could be the house that we have, could be the job that we have, it could be the car that we drive, we need a car for transportation and whatever. And notice that you can only fit those medium-sized rocks in around where the big rocks allow. All right? And then the sand is the small stuff. Maybe we could say frivolous things. Could be going to Starbucks, getting coffee, hobby, shopping, hunting, fishing, vacationing. All things that, in and of themselves, nothing wrong with in particular. But they need to fit around the existing, you know, the big rocks and the little rocks. And if you fill up your life, even starting with the medium-sized rocks, right, you can completely focus on and put all your time towards a job or something like that. You may have time and money for a few extra things, right? But you're going to not have much time for the really important things. So that's another thing, along with teaching time management, is, or any teaching, is that illustrations and object lessons are always a good way to teach. Now, I have a little story, and again, this is not a new story. Didn't make it up. It's not about Candyland or anything like that. Not a personal experience. But not too long ago, there was a successful businessman from New York City. Harvard graduate. Harvard business. I guess they do business there. And he was vacationing. He was dumping a little sand in his jar. Off of an island off of Greece in the Mediterranean Sea. And he was walking along the beach. It was blustery at home. Loud. And he's just walking along the beach. 77 degrees and a little tropical breeze blowing. And as he walked along, he just couldn't wait till he got to the next little shop to try their drinks and snacks. And he noticed a little rickety boat with a young to middle-aged, you know, tanned fisherman climbing out with a net full of fish. And as the businessman was hungry, he complimented the fisherman on his nice fat fish. They looked really good. And he said, how long did it take you to catch those fish? I said, well, 2 hours, maybe 3 hours max. Not real long. So why didn't you keep fishing? Right? I mean, you got the whole day. This is not even lunch. And he said, this is enough fish. It's enough to eat. I have enough fish to eat for my family. I can sell a few fish at the market, buy what I need. And the businessman said, well, what are you going to do now? And the fisherman said, well, I'll probably go home in a little cottage beside the seashore and grab a bite to eat. Might eat a fish, you know, play with the children. Spend some time with my wife, take a nap. Might go into the town in the evening and eat supper with some friends. Just relax. Might do some dancing or play the bouzouki, or, you know. And the businessman said, "Well, I am a Harvard business graduate, and I can help you out here." He says, "What you need to do is you need to fish all day long. And then you can sell, you have more fish to sell, which means you will get more money. And if you have more money, you can buy a bigger boat, better nets, and you can get more fish. And then you can sell it and make more money. And eventually you can buy two boats, which means you can catch twice as many fish, which means you can sell them for more money. With more money, you can buy another boat, and pretty soon you'll have a whole fleet of boats. And then you'll have so many fish, you can go, you can skip the middleman, you go straight to the end user, basically, and get better margins. You can set up a marketing branch, and you'll get so big that you might want to set up some fish processing plants. And eventually you can move to New York City and have a worldwide fishing operation, openly traded company." And the fisherman said, "Well, how long would that take?" And the businessman thought about what they said. "Oh, 20, 25 years probably." And he said, "Well, then what would I do?" He said, "Well, then you would have this big business. And lots of stocks would be worth a lot of money. And you could sell those stocks and make millions and millions of dollars." And the fisherman was all of a sudden a little bit interested. He said, "Millions of dollars, really? And then what would I do?" And the businessman said, "Well," he said, "at that point, you know, you'll be getting a little older. Maybe time to retire. You could, you know, sell out, have millions of dollars. You could probably be time to get out of New York City. You could buy a little villa on some tropical island somewhere out by the ocean. And you could sleep in the morning. You get up and fish if you want to. Catch a few fish. You could go home and have lunch with the family. You could play with your grandchildren at this point, right? You could spend some time with your wife. You could take a nap. You could go to just take it easy. You could eat supper with your friends. You could even maybe dance, play the bouzouki." And the fisherman didn't have any more questions. So, now, I am not promoting working 2 to 3 hours a day. That's not, don't get the wrong message here. Right? But I guess the part about it is, you know, filling our jar with what is really important, not spending all your life doing something that you have it so filled up that you don't have time or room for the most important things. So that's some general time management. Stories are another great way to teach your students. Yes.
So we have the activities all day long, morning till evening. Where do we fit that in all this? I mean, when you're busy with your business, with your school, with your everyday activities, children, family, whatever, where do we fit that in all this to pay attention to the big rocks? Because things do not come out of thin air. Right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we do it?
That's a good question. And there's probably some better answers out here, so I'll say a little something, then if anybody has anything. How do we, if we're working dawn to dusk, we could be teaching school, it could be really important things, it could be taking care of our family, making time for our students, so where do we fit God into that?
I know some days they do everything as you do for God, okay, but you don't think of God when you take care of your children, right? So you just serve God maybe by doing that, but I'm thinking about priorities and about our minds, our thoughts, you know,
mindset, and so on. Yeah. So I guess I would say a couple things. One is, if you have even a little time to start the day that way, where you just take the time to think on God, and then as you go about your day, I guess I would say one thing I think of is more than specifically thinking. Now, I am doing this for God. We want that mindset. But what our job is no matter what we're doing, that we are the extension of God to whoever we're dealing with. So, think about that what we're doing. Excuse me. That we are God's hands, for example, as we're working. That sort of thing. I don't know if that answers your question at all. But any other thoughts on that? Anybody has?
I'm just thinking because, you know, I come from a different world. I come from Europe. In Europe, mm-hmm. people get more time for themselves in a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't spend so much time on working and thinking about business and making money. They have, it's like me, like the type of mentality. As soon as you get money, you just spend it on vacation and don't think about tomorrow, how to
yep.
build it up and buy it. So that leaves them more time. But I see that there is a risk if you have more time to use it in an unwise way, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's why I'm asking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts on that before we...
brother-in-law who he immigrated when he was about 25 or so. North American native, actually. And his policy has been when he gets up in the morning, no Bible, no breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he puts God first.
Yep. Very good. Yeah, if anything comes to mind as we're going through this, feel free to give some thoughts or ask some questions. I'll try to give a little time at the end if there's anything, but if not, if you want to make sure you get it in, you better do it as we're going. So here's just a couple, I guess, kind of basic pointers about maybe how we can manage our own time and how we can help our students manage time. Like most things, in order to teach something well, we should be doing it ourselves. So teaching time management well means that we're managing our own time. And it means, I believe, especially in a school setting, that we create an atmosphere, as a teacher, we create an atmosphere that practicing time management does not just survive if somebody has a lot of concentration, but that it can thrive. So that kind of ties into the first thing here. The first point I have is to eliminate distractions, or at least really pare them down. Right? You're not going to completely eliminate distractions, and this is not something we should entirely put on our students' shoulders, because they have control over only so many distractions that happen. As a teacher, we have the say-so over quite a few more distractions. So it's a good skill, I guess, to be able to focus when other things are going on. But not everybody can just do that. And it's not probably natural for most people. So if the environment in the classroom is noisy, lots of whispering going on, multiple students up at a time, and another one of your classes is dragging on for a half hour, right, and there's multiple grades, then how is an easily distracted student supposed to function? Some years I did allow some whispering. I gasp at myself sometimes. And some years I didn't. Another gasp at the inconsistency, right? But I will see. I was thinking how many of my students might be in here. It looks like not many, so I thought I might get by. I guess not. But groups of students are hugely inconsistent. And so here are some things to think about with your class and creating an environment that is, I don't know if you can say free of, but where you have eliminated all unnecessary distractions. One thing makes a difference. So I've not taught that many years. I taught 7 years in 3 different classrooms. And room size and acoustics make a big difference. They do. If something gets dropped, if somebody's whispering, if you don't have that many students and they're well spaced, and you have a, like I had over there, I had one kind of counter with a bunch of computers, and sometimes working on a project together and a little bit of whispering almost needs to happen. Now you can set things up so it doesn't, but in that flow, as long as keep it to a really dull roar, which is not how things naturally go. But room size and class size do make a difference. How, you know, also just the students make a difference. Their ability to limit themselves and their concentration abilities. We need to be very careful if we allow certain things. And one thing to keep in mind, you've been told this a bunch of times, probably you've probably said it yourself, pulling in the reins will be necessary at some point in your teaching career, I believe. But it's a lot harder to do that than to relax them a bit. But don't let that keep you from pulling them in. Remember that some of these things, if they're kept very well under control, are maybe okay, but they are most certainly a privilege at best. And privileges can be pulled any time for any reason. They are not right. So remember that and remind about that. Just some other practice, you know, you might need to separate. I tried to set up my rooms different times randomly. I mean, within grades, keep grades together. Sometimes you have to keep some people apart because they distract each other. It's the way it is. It's just you might as well do that instead of always be fighting it. Should they learn how to concentrate and not distract each other? Yes, but you can just help them out a little bit. They can be learning other things at that point. And maybe the backs need to be to the window. You know, just some real basic things. Another one is to be focused on the task at hand. And that can be anything from one. some of my students, if they were to use this time management skill, would have saved them a lot of time. And that is, you should make sure you are answering the question that is being asked, not the question you want to answer. Seems kind of obvious, but that does waste a lot of time sometimes. When it is a particular class, math class, for example, they should not have their reading book out. They should not be holding their math book up like this because they very well could be reading another book inside. But they should have their math book out. And depending how you have your class, pencil and eraser, notebook, depending how you have your class, you want to do some things in class or whatever. Now, some people are fully capable of being completely distracted by a math book and math book only. So, yeah, but still, you can eliminate a lot of other things. There should not, they should not have toys or knickknacks out. I tried to keep the desk clear of rubble. I did collect a lot of items, and I tried to make clear that they may or may not get them back. Teacher discretion here. And so, you know, know, well, thank you. I've always wanted a knife like that. You know, into the drawer. So I had a pretty much entire drawer full one year, collected from one individual, and I don't know how he came up with that many things. Brought them in his pockets, stuck them in the corners, and just pull them out at the most inopportune times. You know. And I don't know. I mean, I don't frisk the students when they come in, right? So, but as you're having class or as they're doing their work, you should be free of those distractions. Focus on what you're doing. Math, in this case. Now, focus in and of itself is not everything. I don't know even the right way to say this, because I'm going to say work with a consistent speed, not focus only. I had a student once that was like A plus average, right? But he had a lot of trouble getting his work in on time. So depending how you do that, he wouldn't be A plus. But his work was perfect. Handwriting was perfect. If it wasn't perfect, he'd erase it and do it perfect. Probably a 99.5 average or something. I mean, ridiculous. But it was just, I mean, if, you know, 99 on a test was kind of down there. So, but he wasn't getting his work done. And so in discussions with his dad and him, and the dad finally said, well, there's some things we're going to have to change, take away, if you're not getting your work done in time. Again, I was teaching grades 8 through 10, so I was old enough to keep, you know, his work on this time management thing. And he did, he kept his focus. He worked a little faster. Not everything was perfect. But he maybe dropped to like a 98.5 average, right? I mean, it was minute difference. And so just the focus, he was probably the most focused individual I've ever met. So much focus that it was a negative. So it's more than just focus. We need to focus, but keep going. Right? Doesn't have to be perfect. Needs to be as good as you can do it in the time you have.
Would you say that when he did it by himself without you intervening, like he did it in a more natural way, although he skipped some deadlines, while he was struggling to do it better, it took for him a longer time?
Yes.
So it
yes.
was kind of not natural to him?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay, and another one then is to be or to get organized. And here again, this is something the teachers should be themselves. Then help your students organize. I had another student, didn't do terrible, probably, I mean, it wasn't great, maybe C plus or something. And he had real struggle. He would take loads of homework home every day. I didn't like how much homework he was needing to take home. He did get distracted fairly easily, but it wasn't just that. He was smart. Come to find out, he was going through his books, start with math, let's say, and he would go through and he'd do all the easiest problems. It takes a little time to figure out which the easiest ones are, right? So there's some time management out the door. And then, okay, got the easiest ones in there, go to language, go through and do the English. English, yeah, I suppose. Easiest ones. And he'd do that in all the subjects. And by the end of the day, he had all the easy work done, none of his subjects done, take all the books home and had all the hard work after school. And it was a mess. He'd be up till midnight. So, we had to work on a basic organizational skill of start with the beginning and work your way through to the end. I mean, you got to take breaks for the classes and everything, but don't skip around. I mean, if somebody has no problem getting done, it's not a big deal. But time management, he wasted a tremendous amount of time doing that, as well as saving the last bit of his brain for the hardest problems. Another one is to use calendars, checklists, part of being organized, really. These all kind of tie together. But part of time management is knowing what's going on in the present, what's going on in the future. And I think every student should know, okay, Monday we do these subjects, Tuesday we do these subjects. There's different ways of doing it. They can keep journals, whatever. Another thing that I found helpful is on a whiteboard or whatever, write up the day's assignments for everybody, or you can write what's due that day, combination, but just so everybody knows what's happening today, what's coming tomorrow, and then really, it doesn't just come automatically for all people to do the things that are due tomorrow first, right? You might have a couple subjects that you do every day, and some might be every other day, or once a week, or twice a week, and you have a class and they're working on something that's due next week, and they've got two or three unfinished assignments that are due the next day, right? Bad time management. But you need to teach that, right? We get done with this, we get done with the ones that are due first, and we work our way through them. Scheduling, calendars, and so forth. And then, the last one I have, I want to do it sparingly. We don't want to be in a, you know, I deserve this sort of mindset. But you could schedule rewards for getting things done or a certain amount we'll get into that. So, like I said, you might want to do this one sparingly. You might not want to do it. You might want to do it. One year, I put together a monetary system of rewards and penalties, I guess. It's not real money. Well, it cost me real money, but not the dollar figures that are in here. So don't worry, I was not nearly that wealthy. But this is fake money. We kept in journals and so forth. I kept track and each student kept track. And we had to balance at the end of each week. And it took a lot of time, really did. So you got to sort of calculate that into your own time management, right? But it was an incentive program designed to teach time management on some level. What is the most important? What can I be doing to learn more? Get better grades, promote reading, promote writing outside of just schoolwork. How to handle money in, I don't know that they considered it a fun way, but a different out-of-the-textbook way, I suppose. And to teach them how to work together for a common goal with a group, because what they were purchasing had to be purchased as a group. I mean, some people are pulling more of the weight than others, right? And you don't want to set up an inequality thing where some people can't be contributing, right? So there was some time and effort put into that part. So the rewards and fines are based on grades, reading and writing outside of schoolwork once their work was done, jobs, how well they did their jobs, their behavior. They could be fined or given money for clean desk, dirty desk, different things. And the rewards were to be collectively purchased. And I on purpose put in kind of the first one, the cheapest one, was just a drink from Dutch Brothers drive-thru, right? And so they could decide at a certain, I forget the dollar figure, collectively, and it was a democracy, right? So they got, if somebody said, no, I want to do something else, it didn't matter if the majority wanted to purchase, we were purchasing, if we had the money. So the first one was a drink from Dutch Brothers. The next, the bigger one, was they could come over to our place for barbecue. And the third one was they could buy an extra field trip for the year. And I made it so that they'd have to improve their initial performance to get the field trip, let alone everything. That was kind of the goal. Well, we started out half excited, half-hearted. And we got enough money for drinks from Dutch Brothers. And so the class decided we want drinks from Dutch Brothers because we can have it now. And The next thing I'm going to read is a response by one of the students to his perception of a lack of proper time management and budgeting skills. Because, well, you can see it in here. You think we're going to have to buckle down. We're going to have to manage things. persons of the 8th to 10th grades of the Lighthouse Mennonite School. Greetings and salutations. So you know it's going to be good. Because of the adequate amount of money of which, it's not all perfect English, but that's great, of which we have acquired since the beginning of the school year, and because of the possibility of spending it, many questions have been raised. This is the reason for which I have prepared this important document. Because of the tremendous prices that were placed on the three major items of which to purchase, you must understand that this is not an easy ride. The pressing social engagement of which was voted for was not completely a good idea because of your frivolous mindset that a few that a few people have. At the present, the average weekly income for each person is $550. There are a few people earning up to double that amount. There are a few people earning less than that. So I believe that the field trip must have cost $250,000. So he's saying $250,000 divided by 17 people equals $14,705. Do you understand how long it will take to make $14,705 with an average of $550 a week? $550 times 27 weeks equals $14,850. That'd be close. Do you know how many weeks there are in a school year? This year it's about 30. You think you can easily get a Dutch Brothers coffee, a barbecue, and a field trip? They total $31,000. No, $310,000. $310,000 divided by 17 people is $18,235. $18,235 divided by $550 monthly income is 33 weeks. Obviously, you are going to up your weekly income if you think we're going to get it all. Partly so the rich don't have to foot the poor to such a large extent. Tell where he was in this quiz. Also, you need to understand that these are merely estimates, so that means that you could, more than likely, have to pay a little more. Hopefully, this will help you reconsider your frivolous spending attitude, because there's a little more to it than some of you thought. Keep in mind that these are simply my calculations. If you have more accurate figures, feel free to submit them to me. I should have awarded him a lot of money for that one, but no. So you know, we did frivolously drink our coffee still. But the students did, I think it got their attention, actually. And okay, if we're going to make this work, it was set up so they would not make it strictly on grades. They would have to do some outside reading, some outside writing maybe, some outside other things to generate this. So, time management became fairly important. Yes?
We applied it for 2 years. We decided recently to have it 1 year off, 1 year on. So we have a system in which we convert points. They have a table with points they get every day for three aspects of their activity: academics, tidiness, and discipline in the classroom. So we convert those points in dollars, and after a while, I don't know, 6 weeks, we open a store. We make the store open. You know, we buy some items, and they can buy with the dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And at the end of the, we don't go with field trips and, you know,
yeah,
like expensive American stuff.
Yeah. It makes me feel bad.
But we do it for, yeah, I don't know, items of sweets and stuff like this.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, they will get some items for the next year, school year, too, like bags or some toys for the vacation.
Uh-huh. Because that, and then there's a year up where you don't do it, right? It's every other year?
Yeah. Yeah. So the general store, the big,
yeah,
store, the Walmart will come at the end,
yeah,
of the year.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great idea. All right. Are there any questions, comments, follow-up things, items of correction, or just further thoughts?
So in your opinion, this thing of calendars and checklists that the students are keeping, is it better for them to create that themselves, or the teachers are trying to do something all of that on?
It is great if they do it themselves. One thing I think we have, maybe as a teacher, we have to be careful of is that whatever we do needs to be pretty consistent and streamlined so that it's attainable for everybody and we can easily keep up to date. Because those things, if it's something we're requiring, then we have to keep up on it. And those become time management issues for ourselves. And so I would probably lean more towards having given a form for them to work on or something, but I don't know. Any other thoughts on that?
I think it's something you haven't done before. I think you should be sort of careful, maybe incrementally implement it. Mm-hmm. Like maybe because you don't know how much you're going to be able to do, how much they're going to be able to do, and to have, you know, sort of work, build this project as you go.
Yep.
And then you sort of realize your own limitations and maybe what will make it.
Yeah, and we can have so many good ideas that we're missing sort of the subject, you know, yeah, that whole.
What
because
I did last year, I took a calendar on every child's desk, and the calendar was only with the school days that we had.
Yeah.
Apart from vacations and everything. Mm-hmm. So basically, mostly in science and language, what I did, I marked on the calendar from the beginning of the year every date for every quiz and test.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a certain decent amount of time for every day.
They knew when it was coming.
So they were just crossing out the days and they were just knowing from the beginning. December 5th I will have the final test for I don't know what. So
you are organized.
Well.
That's good. Yeah.
It worked very well this
yeah,
year.
Yeah. That is very good.
I think it's pretty important to have the books checked every night and back on their desk so they know that you're actually putting effort in.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Willie?
I was one of those students that had a kind of a problem staring at the ceiling while I was supposed to be doing my work.
Amazed.
My teachers always would encourage me to get to work, right? And so I always just assumed that was a problem. But later on, just recently when I was studying over in Bangladesh, I had an opportunity to reevaluate the whole concept and since I'm older, I could put my head down and plow through language homework in half an hour if I wanted to, but then I didn't remember it very well. If I would dawdle over it for an hour or two, like I used to do in school, I remembered it a lot better. And so my question is, can that be a language or any type of learning mechanism for some students? Is it a way that they learn better? And if it is, should we always discourage it?
Well, I think our time's about up. Take my time. I'm glad Howard's in here. I do think students learn differently, and one important thing. I think there's a couple important things. One is that they're not distracting other people, and another is that sometimes in our doodling, we become focused on something completely different, right? So, I mean, one year I really had to work on keeping, like, the elk portraits out of the books and so forth, you know. And it looked like they're busy even, but some of that doodling would get actually focused in on something. But as far as learning mechanisms, anybody have more good answers on that? Or should we discourage all staring into space?
Is that...
if they're producing or not. Mm-hmm. If they're not producing, then stop staring at the ceiling right away.
If not, a little sooner. But,
yeah. Or Mr.
Howard. Yeah. Yeah.
Daydreaming and staring at the ceiling, that's probably when creative people get their most creative ideas.
Yeah.
And so, of course, there's a place for slogging through the word.
Yeah.
And letting your mind wander. I confess this morning during an excellent devotional this morning, I got thinking about, I have a vulnerable I should prepare for the first day of school. Somehow I thought. And I got this idea all of a sudden that I could do something with different ways of getting to Toronto by means of transportation. So I'd string up a bicycle there, a real bicycle, and pictures of a train and airplane. And then I'd have the only way to get to heaven is Jesus.
We've got
the same one, the blue.
Got the best doodler right here, right?
What did you come up with during this class?
I'll plug my ear. All right. Very good. Thank you all. Thanks for your input, questions and comments and so forth. That is all that I have to share. Thank you for your attention. You're dismissed.